It's time for Ask Dr. Daria on RadioMD.com. Do you have a question? Tweet your questions to @ShareCareInc using #ShareCareRadio or email your questions to AskDrDaria@RadioMD.com. Here's Dr. Daria.
Welcome back. Next up on Ask Dr. Daria, I'll be answering real ShareCare users' questions on all things health and wellness. And I love when you send in your questions because I really like being able to answer and really give you information about the questions that you have. So please continue to do it just like you have been, and we will always try to get them on the air. So our first question is, what can I do to reduce bloating? Oh, and just a reminder for all of our listeners that you will find this information on my ShareCare profile as well. I put all of these questions that we answer on ShareCare.com on the profile for Dr. Daria Long Gillespie. So back into our question, what can I do to reduce bloating? So bloating often happens as a result of your diet, causing discomfort, and even sometimes you can feel that physical swelling of your stomach. Culprits usually include foods that are prone to creating gas, such as beans, which most of us know, but also others like broccoli, potatoes, or even corn or pasta. Other foods such as artificial sweeteners, soda, and even chewing gum can be culprits that you may not know about. Now, for some people, that can be other things that they just can't digest well, and that can include wheat and dairy. So what to do? You know, remember that what specifically causes bloating in one person may not cause trouble for another person so much. It's very personalized. So you really have to monitor what you're eating and keep track of what your symptoms are. So if you really find that you're having a lot of bloating, if you can remember what you ate earlier that day, if not, start to keep a food journal. Write down what you're eating and your symptoms afterwards so you can see if there is a pattern. That's one option. You can try an elimination diet. If you think you know what is the culprit, try a diet where you take that out of your diet for about at least a week and see how that makes you feel. If there's no bloating, then that can help you, and you can slowly introduce things back into your diet once you've started to see what your symptoms are. And then if that doesn't work or you're having chronic symptoms, you know, I'd really advise following up with your doctor to discuss your specific symptoms with them and see if they think you need any additional testing or imaging. And you don't want to let it go if you're having these changes and you're not finding any therapy or any solution to it. Go see your doctor. Now, this next one was about clearly a breastfeeding parent, mother. He said, what complications from breastfeeding can I expect? So, you know, I wouldn't really call them complications. Breastfeeding can have some challenges and some effects, so it's always good to know about them so that you can be proactive and address them or know what solutions you could need or even prevent them. So I like to share them with moms or women who are considering breastfeeding. One is soreness. It's not uncommon for breastfeeding to initially be uncomfortable for the first couple of days. And so that's not atypical, but it really shouldn't hurt. And it shouldn't continue to hurt. If it does continue to hurt, check with your doctor or a lactation consultant, you know, to get help with the baby's latch or to check the baby's mouth and tongue to make sure that the baby isn't having any issues. Also, check for cuts on your own skin, which can really make it painful, like a paper cut, you can imagine. And you can, of course, avoid those further with lotions such as lanolin, which are sold specifically for breastfeeding mothers. And again, making sure that the baby's latch is efficient so it's not making things worse. A lot of hospitals let you talk to a lactation consultant before you even leave the hospital. So I tell every woman who's even considering doing breastfeeding to speak to the lactation consultant while she's still in the hospital, get that training. Get somebody looking at what you're doing because it's not necessarily intuitive. It can seem overwhelming and challenging, but you get somebody who knows what she's doing. I know some lactation consultants have seen it all, and they have such great advice and really, really helpful. So don't resist. I mean, don't miss out on that assistance that you can do. In addition, so some other complications, especially if you haven't nursed in a few hours, women can feel engorged, which itself is very uncomfortable. Warm compresses and nursing more often will relieve that. Another one is plugged ducts that can happen. It often occurs when a milk duct doesn't drain properly and eventually can become inflamed and can really be painful. If this happens, you need to breastfeed on the affected side as frequently as every 2 hours. Kind of massage the area, use a warm compress, and also make sure you're not wearing a bra that's too tight because that can actually constrict and worsen the symptoms. So always make sure that you're trying to use something that's a breastfeeding bra and a very comfortable one. Lastly, some women may develop an infection known as mastitis. Now that happens, the area around the breast becomes red, swollen, painful. It's really tender. and they may even have discharge. If this happens, you can keep breastfeeding. Your doctor will tell you this, but you would also need to be seeing your doctor because you may need antibiotics for the infection. So talk to your doctor. Make sure they know that you are breastfeeding so they can give you an antibiotic that is safe for baby. That is definitely something you want to be sure of because it would get into the breast milk. All right, next question. And this was about what are some benefits of reducing gluten. So going gluten-free is a big trend right now, but it's really important to differentiate. There are people who truly need to be gluten-free because they have a medical condition called celiac disease. Then there are those who are just doing it because it's the latest Hollywood craze and they are trying to be healthier or lose weight. Now, people with celiac disease, they are physically unable to break down specific foods with gluten in them. That's going to cause pain, abnormal bowel movements, weight loss, and other medical complications. Now, the reason that gluten-free has become trendy is that compared to the standard Western diet of, you know, white bread and things, it can be healthier than that. However, gluten-free eliminates certain foods and may make it difficult to get all the nutrition that you need. So what I tell most people is that for most people, there's no additional health benefit to going gluten-free if you don't have celiac disease over a standard healthy or Mediterranean type diet. So those, you know, the Mediterranean type diet is really one of the healthiest ones. It has gluten. It has a variety of really important nutrients that are going to be your healthiest and best for overall health. Our next one, it is summer, and this is so relevant, is it how often should I examine my skin for skin cancer? So this one, there's not a set schedule as far as actual routine screening. The American Academy of Dermatology states that how regular someone needs a formal physician skin exam really depends on your health history. Now, the American Academy of Dermatology, or the AAD, offers free screening for skin cancer with their Spot Me program. You can also ask your primary care doctor. Now, people with higher risk for melanoma, like those who have a strong family history of melanoma or they have many atypical moles, would likely need an annual exam. But then, of course, there's also self-screening, and I advise everyone to keep an eye on the moles that they have or skin changes. Regardless of any schedule for examinations or screening, or even if you were screened yesterday, if you notice a change in your birthmark or mole or other skin change, you should schedule an evaluation with your doctor or dermatologist. And remember, just keep an eye. Remember those ABCDEs of melanoma. You can find more information at the American Academy of Dermatology's website for that as well. Our next question from a user is, how can my doctor find out if I or my husband have a fertility problem? Now, infertility is defined as a failure to conceive after 12 months of regular intercourse in women under 35, and women older than 35 is defined as 6 months. So it's a shorter window, mainly because if somebody's older than 35 and they're having trouble conceiving, doctors want to get you in sooner because they know the time and the window could be shorter for them. So they don't want them to wait a long time. Now, if someone believes that they fall into that category, they should first follow up with their OBGYN. Now, there are also OBGYNs that specialize specifically in infertility. So if you have concerns or your OBGYN finds something abnormal, they may refer you to a fertility specialist. Now, that specialist technically is called a reproductive endocrinology and infertility, or REI specialist. If you do need to do a search, that's who you want to be searching for, reproductive endocrinology and infertility. Now, that doctor is likely going to do testing, which could include semen analysis, discussion of the female's menstrual history, family history, and also testing her hormones such as LH and progesterone, FSH and estradiol. They may also just look at your general health, because we know that a female's general health is very important to her ability to conceive. They may do some imaging studies to evaluate the uterus and fallopian tubes, and they may do other tests, but it really is going to depend on the results of those preliminary tests, your history, and going from there. So start with your OBGYN or an REI specialist if you think that you're at risk. That's all we have time for today. We'll be back next week on Share Care Radio, and in the meantime, feel free to tweet me your health questions, comments on the show, suggestions to anything on the show at ShareCare Inc. using the hashtag ShareCare Radio. You can also tweet to me at Dr. Daria. If you missed a segment or even part of the show, remember you can go to RadioMD.com to find and download it and be able to access the podcast as well. This is Dr. Daria, and you're listening to ShareCare Radio on RadioMD, where we help you be your healthiest you. Thanks for listening, and stay well.